Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrn, a potpourri podcast by me, veterinary ethologist Myrn Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed.
Because of my background and work compared to other people, I've probably been more deeply immersed in the middle to upper class white American standard of what constitutes quality dog ownership. Even so, or perhaps because of this, the changes in that standard increasingly trouble me. My first doubts arose when I realized that responsible pet ownership / parenthood had become equated with spaying or neutering one's dog in some people's minds. Doing so didn't represent one of the many factors that contributed to a quality human-animal bond. It was the only thing that mattered to those who championed this view. I first encountered the almost messianic zeal of some of those who maintained this view during a presentation given by a young veterinarian who participated in a spay-neuter mission sent to a then war-ravaged area of Eastern Europe. His slides of the area's free-roaming dogs also included bombed homes and schools and gaunt, shell-shocked, and starving people sitting on steps that led to nothing but piles of rubble. But the speaker only talked about the poor dogs and implied that spay and neuter would save them. I doubt he even noticed the people. If he did, he saw them as the cause of the dog's irresponsible reproductive status. The idea that these people may have interacted with those dogs in mutually meaningful ways never crossed his mind. Since then, swooping down on areas perceived as substandard domestic canine habitats by those raised to see house dogs as the epitome has become a pastime for thousands of self-professed dog lovers. Armed with a conviction that would put some saints to shame, they don't hesitate to round up loose dogs, relieve them of their gonads, and now ship them off to homes that meet their, the rescuers, approval. Consequently, a study of the human-canine relationships in the daily lives and culture of a Native American tribal community, like the one published in the June 2018 Anthrozoos, provided some long overdue insights into these human free-roaming dog interactions. To accomplish this, the researchers explored the concept of dog restriction and what it means in a culture with ancient human-canine roots that have been profoundly disrupted by Euro-American colonization. The study was part of a collaboration with a no-kill tribal humane society that aimed to restore the traditional relationship between dogs and the tribe as part of a larger cultural healing process. Among the findings of the study was the realization that the relationship between the dogs and the people on the reservation is a communal rather than an exclusive one. People of all ages in the community rarely walked alone. Groups of dogs followed children to school, then vanished, only to reappear when school let out. They monitored children walking down roads, crossing the busy highway, playing in backyards or schoolyards. Members of the community counted on the dogs to protect the children and others perceived as vulnerable in the community. One researcher described the dog's behavior as, quote, a contemporary twist on sheep herding, unquote. And while outsiders considered all the dogs strays, most community members saw them as belonging to someone. In addition to providing protection to community members, the dogs also served as a source of humor, amusement, and pride. The people bestowed unique names on dogs with certain physical or behavioral quirks, or those who demonstrated superior intelligence. When these animals died, they would become part of the oral history passed from one generation to another. Members of the community and their elders would say, "A home is a home, but without children and dogs, it's not complete." Within this culture, free-roaming dogs not only were important, they were part of home as well as a social necessity. Although the participants in the study used many of the same terms to describe their dogs most of us do, family, friends, pets, their relationships also embodied a collective memory of a close human-canine relationship that went back thousands of years. When the members of this community spoke of the dog as family, they meant kin, a member of the social web of relationships that formed a valued part of their lives, hence the taboo on eating them. However, unlike those in the pet-owning population, those who adhere to tribal traditions don't humanize the dogs. They believe that the dogs possess special powers. They can detect spirits, foretell and forewarn humans about death, and will sacrifice their own lives by taking on the disease of a sick person. Those who ascribe to ancient nomadic tribal traditions also believe that those who mistreat dogs, which includes confining them, will be punished. Community lore is filled with stories of those who mistreated dogs who suffered serious consequences, such as terminal illnesses that befell them or family members. Anyone who mistreats a dog does so at their peril. And contrary to some outsiders' beliefs, the members of this community have nothing against spaying and neutering their collective population of dogs. Most of them simply can't afford it. At the same time, though, the contemporary tribal community must face the same problems as communities nationwide. Poverty and substandard housing and educational systems, and substance abuse and all the negative behaviors related to it, all exacerbated by racism in some instances. So while the traditions and culture of the community may value the dogs and their relationships with them and treat them well, some individuals within the community do not. However, this is an American problem that occurs in all levels of our society, not only a Native American one. In their concluding remarks, the authors question the validity of an ethnocentric bias that perceives all free-roaming dogs as strays or feral, unloved and feared by humans. As their study and others demonstrate, free-roaming dogs may be loved and feared within a community, and those who are deeply loved can be loved without being owned in a culture that views dog confinement as mistreatment. The researchers also note that human-canine double standards may exist in a traditional community, as evidenced by the presence of little dogs, mostly Chihuahuas, referred to as house dogs in the study population. Some researchers hypothesize that these dogs' presence may be the result of media glamorization of the breed in Taco Bell ads, the highly publicized exploits of socialite Paris Hilton and her Chihuahua, and in two films, Legally Blonde and Beverly Hills Chihuahua. Unlike the free-roaming dogs in the tribal community, these animals are highly humanized just like their media versions were. For me, this study served as yet another reminder of the devastating effects hubris may have on our understanding and appreciation of the full range of the human-canine bond. To assume that the beliefs and standards that apply to one group of people and dogs living in one environment should apply to all people and dogs is beyond arrogance. It's a disservice to humans and dogs and the time-tested versatility and power of the human-canine bond.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries, and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Katova Arts, www.katova.com.